Hi, I'm Emily Trotter, and you're listening to Bible Talk on the Nothing But Fine Network. When I was a little girl, my grandfather, who was a gospel singer, always said he was nothing but fine when someone asked him how he was. My hope is that within our studies of God's Word, you will be reminded that through hard seasons and unforeseen circumstances, we can find contentment because God is in control and life is nothing but fine. Hello. Glad you're here. Welcome to Bible Talk. This is part two of Matthew chapter 17, the perfect Easter. We had two great Easter Bible studies, Bible Talks, after Easter. So, I mean, still important to learn. Just because it's over doesn't mean that it's over, right? That's right. There you go. And all of it's about Jesus anyway, right? That's what Matthew's about. All of it's about Jesus. So it's all fitting, right? Okay. So we're going to get back. Last week, I probably bored you to tears. I surely did not because I'm so entertaining. About all the veils and what all that meant. And so Jesus has been transfigured in front of, Peter, James, and John on a mountain. He calls them to us. And I want to remind you what, transfigure means in the Greek. It means changing form in keeping with your inner reality. And it's so Christ was resplendent with a divine brightness. And so remember, this is just him becoming more of who he was, or really being all he was. He was Jesus as Jesus, like all caps with an exclamation point. He was fully himself in front of those three disciples at that time. And man. It was exciting because now we're going to go on and see what else happens in this passage. So Jesus is Jesus, all caps, and his face shone like the sun and his clothes became as white as the light. And just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Yeah. What? What did the other three... Peter, James, and John are experiencing this up on a mountain. Not only have they been singled out, and when Jesus says, hey, come up here, you guys, come up here, come be with me on the mountain, which is where he went. He withdrew to the mountain a lot of times. He withdrew a lot to reflect and to pray and to speak with his Father and to just be, maybe he was just capital Jesus when he withdrew from them, right? Okay. So this is happening. And so here's an interesting thing too. He is speaking with Moses and Elijah like they know each other. Because why? Because they do know each other. Because Jesus is God. They do know each other and they're speaking together. And Peter, of course, Peter, you know, he's the one. Peter says to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Peter speaks what James and John are surely also thinking, saying, I don't ever want this to end. I want us to just move here. I want to stay here with you in all your glory and your friends, Moses and Elijah. And the other thing is that Peter, they recognized who Moses and Elijah was. And I had to look this up because I was like, I mean, how did they know? It wasn't like they could Google it. Who are these people? Grab their phone and do a quick search. They couldn't do that, right? But it said in the things that I was, a commentary or somewhere, I don't even remember where I read it, said that Jewish people would have been very familiar with what Elijah and Moses looked like. Okay, they would have known what he looked like. And I mean, and there's always been art, of course, but they would have been told either, you know, passed down or had seen, you know, drawings and things. So they recognized them immediately as to who they were. Okay. That was interesting to me because, I mean, I kind of know what, you know, what Google says. Oh, well, we can't really ask Google anymore, can we? What Moses and Elijah look like? Because chances are it won't be accurate. Am I right? Okay, because I have a feeling he doesn't look like what is pictured in the children's Bibles. You know all the drawings and the illustrations used in children's churches. I don't know; they may be different now, But they had this Moses and he's wearing red, like a red striped tunic kind of thing. And he's got luscious gray hair. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not what he looks like. I mean, I could be wrong. That could be exactly him, right? But Peter's having such a great time that he was like, I don't ever want to leave. I want us all to stay here just like this from now until forever. I don't want to go back down. Okay. And while he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." And that's when the disciples, when they heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. Now God scared them. Jesus, fully revealed in all his glory, did not. Moses and Elijah didn't get him, but God in the cloud. See, remember when we talk about the cloud, when we were talking about being transfigured and the whole, you know, God always was in a cloud because he was too great. He was too beautiful, right? The radiance would just knock your socks right off. Well, that scared them to death. And then look, this is so sweet. But Jesus came and touched them. He saw them afraid. He knew that was the straw that broke the camel's back of them being, oh, wait a minute. And they fell to the ground. And Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. I'm still here." And I wrote this note in my Bible. Who knows who said it or when? That said, after the fear, there is always Jesus. Because when he says to get up and don't be afraid, when they looked up, they saw that no one except Jesus, they saw that he was the only one left. And after the fear, that's where he was. Okay. And so as they were coming down from the mountain, even though Peter had said he wanted to stay there forever, Jesus was like, "Peter, we can't stay up here forever. We can't do that." And so they were coming down, and Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The thing is, I don't think, unless Jesus in his godness somehow, you know, kind of put them, maybe put cover, you know, because we know that he can hide things that he doesn't really want put out, right? That he doesn't want people to know yet. For all we know, he could have shaded them a little bit. But here's the thing. I don't know. There had to be something different about Peter, James, and John when they came back down. The others had to be like, "Where have y'all been? You look shiny." I thought, "What? You doing something different with your hair?" Don't you think that they had to have looked different? I would hope so. Again, Jesus may have said no, because they weren't supposed to tell. And I mean, how does Peter keep that? Peter, of all people, how does he keep that secret? How does he do it? I don't know. And so the disciples asked him, "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" And Jesus says to them, he basically says, "Y'all, Elijah has come, and he's going to restore all things. But the thing, Elijah's already been here, and they did not recognize him." You know who he's referring to? John the Baptist. And the disciples get it. Then they realize that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. But he says, "They have done to him everything they wished." They've already done that to them. And in the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. So he's telling them again, there's things coming. There's things coming. So the interesting thing to me next that happens in Matthew 17, they've just had this amazing moment. They have seen Jesus as capital Jesus, all caps, exclamation point. They've seen him revealed as who he truly is. They have heard God from a cloud say, "Hey, this is my son. I love him. I'm pleased with him. Do what he says." I mean, maybe that's what kept Peter quiet, right? God from the cloud saying, "I said, do what he says." And then Jesus says, "Keep this up between us, guys. You can talk about it after I've been raised from the dead," which they didn't even, that's not the question they asked. They didn't say, "Wait, what? You're being, wait, okay, you're going to die. You've told us that, but you're going to be raised from, what? When that's when we can talk about it. So it's like never, or I don't get it. That's not the question they asked, right? They weren't supposed to talk about it. They've had this moment. Unbelievable. Cool. Fantastic. But then they get down. They're keeping it to themselves. And a man approached Jesus and knelt before him and said, "Lord, have mercy on my son. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire and into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." Huh. And Jesus replies, "Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." And so Jesus, you know, rebukes the demon that's in him that's causing this, and immediately the boy is healed. And so then the disciples said, why couldn't we do it? And Jesus replies, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." And it makes me think of two things. Number one, it reminded me of Nazareth and how Jesus couldn't perform the miracles there because of unbelief, right? Not because he couldn't, but just there wasn't the belief there. And so, I mean, maybe that's a little bit of what the disciples, and he's not fussing at them when he says, "Oh, you have little faith. How long have I got to put up with you doing this? I'm about to be gone. You got to get it together, buddies. Guys, you got to get this together. I'm about to be gone and you're not going to be able to," unless it was a moment, a teaching moment for them as well. You know, it could be that he was like, "I need them to understand that pretty soon I'm not going to be here to help them. They're going to have the faith to do it without me." Oh, man, that's going to be different. I mean, who's to say? I mean, I could be wrong. Oh, well, I can't give myself too much credit. But I mean, I would say that, gosh, wouldn't it be, I mean, for us, but see, again, we have the benefit of 2020, you know, everything behind you, you can get because you've already been there, done that, seen it. We know what happens. We know the whole story. So I would say that, you know, with Jesus, of course, your faith, yeah, this is going to be healed. Here you go. Now, but if I'm not in his presence, will I be able to have the faith to do what I need to do? It's very, very interesting here, isn't it? But maybe he did that so that they could kind of see, and he had this, you know, this real, you know, illustration. See what just happened when you don't have faith. Or maybe it doesn't say who couldn't do it. It said they'd gone back to Galilee. I mean, maybe it was Peter or James or John, and they couldn't do it because they were feeling themselves for have just been on the mountain with capital J, Jesus. Jesus is what I just said. Capital Jesus. Maybe they were feeling a little good about their own power and not really relying on Jesus. Huh. It's interesting. It's a lot to think about, right? But then he next says, he's going to predict his death. He said, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life." And the disciples were filled with grief. He's still teaching them. He's still molding them. And they've had this moment. His three guys, the three kind of leaders of the group. I mean, they've had this fantastic moment, yet there's still these underlying issues. They're still not getting the point of what Jesus is about to go through. And of course they couldn't. We can't fault them for that. But they're still having these moments where their lack of faith, or maybe too much faith in the wrong thing, is kind of holding them back. Gosh, can you imagine being on that mountain? And maybe that's the point we need to see here, is we have to pretend like all the time we're on that mountain. Even when we're not on the mountain, we have to go through life believing that we are. That we are with capital Jesus. And that gives us the basis of all of our faith. That'll sustain us. And even when we get afraid, even on the mountain they were afraid, even in the midst of capital Jesus and Moses and Elijah, like giants of their whole culture, of their whole upbringing, people that they knew their stories well. Wow. Jesus, they were still afraid in that moment. And Jesus was still there. So we need to carry those mountaintop moments into those moments where we're sad, where we're afraid, where we just mess up and don't have the right kind of faith. Right? Because Jesus loves you.